This is the second part of the meeting of the Truth and Justice for German Society, being held on the June the 19th, 2021. I am Frank Raymond, a member of the Society. Here is the logo of the Society, Truth and Justice for Germans. And I have to say, what a universal truth. Truth and Justice for Germans is truth and justice for the entire Caucasian race, because the Germans were victimized and have been villainized as part of a campaign to destroy the entire Caucasian race. Germany, under National Socialism, stood against this campaign. Germany led the fight. It is unfortunate that the Bolshevik sneak rulers managed to gull, swindle, and trick the USA and Britain, along with the British Empire as well, into fighting against their own people, against the Caucasian race, and for the domination of the Bolshevik sneak rulers. Had enough Americans like Charles Lindbergh stood up, had enough Britons stood up like Oswald Mosley, today Britain and the United States and the rest of Europe would not be colonized, would not be dispossessed by mass immigration which amounts to colonization and replacement of the Caucasian population. Justice for Germans is justice for the entire Caucasian race. That is an unchallengeable truth. And today, our meeting has focused on Alfred Schaeffer. Now, peoples have fought wars since time began. Nations have won wars, nations have lost wars. But something unique happened, something different, something sinister, something utterly vile happened at the end of the Second World War. The Bolshevik sneak rulers were not content with crushing Germany, with bombing it to smithereens, with, of course, the compliance of the swindled and mind-fogged Americans and British. They were not content with crushing Germany, stripping it of its territories, with conducting the mass rape of German women. Oh no, they did something uniquely cruel and uniquely wicked. They decided that they would crush the Germans under the burden of guilt, make them be forever a guilty people, a people ashamed of their very existence, to put the mark of Cain, C-A-I-N, Cain the brother of Abel, to put the mark of Cain on the forehead of the German people. To do this, they even tortured German prisoners. The Nuremberg trials were a hellhole of torture. They tortured them brutally to obtain false confessions to the effect that the National Socialist regime conducted mass murders, that they made lampshades out of human beings, things like that. They tortured thousands of German prisoners to obtain false confessions. It is not enough for them to defeat the people. They wanted to completely destroy them mentally. Today's Germany is a nation of ethnomasochists. They welcome their own destruction. They welcome the flood of invaders and colonists from every part of the globe, from Turkey, from Africa, from the Middle East. They welcome these aliens because they are told that they are so wicked, they are so evil, they have to be replaced. They have to surrender their land to the alien. Now, never in the history of humanity has a conquering people decided to destroy the very mind and dignity and self-worth of a people. But that has been done to the Germans. Yes? And they have reduced Germans to being slaves and whores, cowards. The idea of Prussian disciplined German, the German of courage, of self-control, of discipline, the Prussian ideal, and I say that the P-R-U-S-S-I-N, has been utterly destroyed. There are no authentic Germans anymore, only cowards and collaborators. There are no Prussians. But did I say there are none? There is one. His name is Alfred Schaeffer. There is one.
More than that.
He has stood up. When At the end of the Second World War, they put the German leadership on trial at the Nuremberg trials. And at that time, they put on trial the deputy leader of the National Socialists, Rudolf Hess. Rudolf Hess, despite everything they did to him, all the humiliations, and even as he defended himself in the trials, the torture guards, the MPs, the American MPs who participated in the torture of German prisoners, they stuck their face in front of him mockingly and in front of the camera. Unique that a prisoner, the second man in the state of Germany, is on trial defending himself, and there's an American guard mockingly leering at him and blocking the camera at times. But Rudolf Hess was not fazed. He was not intimidated. He said that, "I regret nothing. Ich bereue nichts." I had the privilege, he said, of working with the greatest son that Germany has produced in this 1,000 years. Now, he said that about Adolf Hitler. You may agree with it or you may not. But I say that Alfred Schaefer is the greatest son that Germany has produced in the post-war period.
Yes.
He stands as a shining example of what the bedrock German is. Underneath all the propaganda, underneath the mind control, underneath the self-abasement, it's the self-humiliation, the bedrock German still exists, and it stands up in the shape of Alfred Schaefer. I know him personally. I have met him many times. He's the bravest man that I have ever met. The bravest living man today, a shining beacon for the white race. You see, the whites today are cowards. In Gaza, the people are, in the Gaza, a tiny strip, which is in effect a concentration camp, the people are starved. They are deprived of water. They have to control their water to sometimes half a glass a day or one glass a day. And yet, starved, humiliated, demonized throughout the world, they stand up and they fight. How many white men today stand up and fight like the people of Gaza or the few Palestinians in the West Bank who are still resisting? But they could. They have it in them. The native genes are there. The spirit of Davy Crockett is there. The spirit of George Washington is there. And we see that in Alfred Schaefer. If you don't have the guts, look at Alfred Schaefer and you will draw courage from it. And that is my intro. Today I'm here to answer questions from any member of the society who wishes to ask my perspective, poor as it is, but I'm volunteering to answer any questions and address any issues that anyone may care to raise. I invite questions.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So you said that the Caucasian race lost the war, is that what you said?
Race lost the war. The Second World War was essentially a war of the Jew Bolsheviks against the Caucasian race.
Okay.
Now, be very clear about this. When I say the Jew Bolsheviks, I mean precisely that. I don't mean the entire nation of the Jews. I don't mean the tribe of the Jews. I have met and interacted with many Jews who are not part of this evil. I'm not towering them as a race, as a nation, as a tribe. It is their leadership, the Jew Bolsheviks, who are responsible for this attack upon the white race and an attempt to, by almost genocidal means, establish a headquarters in the Middle East in the form of the State of Israel. If it were just a homeland for the Jews, that would be all right. But no, it's becoming a headquarters for world rule, as envisaged by David Ben-Gurion in an article he wrote in the Mirror magazine. I'm pretty sure it was the Mirror magazine. He predicted that by 1965, all major world decisions would be taken from Jerusalem. At that time, Israel was a tiny little settler state. It did not even have the West Bank. And it was on the defensive, and yet he thought that all major world decisions would be made from Jerusalem. It would be the capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That was their plan. But to go back to what I was saying, we are focusing on the Jew Bolsheviks, the supremacists. Their war was essentially to first take over Russia and the Ukraine, and then to starve and exploit and milk the Russian and Ukrainian people to build the greatest war machine the world had ever seen. And they built this tremendous war machine. It was immense. It was an offensive war machine. It had several, think about 20 parachute divisions, which are only used for offense. And their plan was, having got hold of Russia and Ukraine, this vast territory, they then build up this war machine and invade all of Europe. But the Europeans stood to it. They stood steadfast. All of Central Europe stood up. Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Croatia, Slovakia, Finland. All these countries stood up together, led by Germany, which was the natural leader as the industrial power of Europe at the time. And they stood against this onslaught. And in this case, they had to do a preemptive attack. The Soviet Union, the Bolshevik regime, would have attacked in either late June or early July. The Germans and their allies, the Central European allies, struck first. Now, if they had not done so, if they had not done so, of course, they were the opprobrium of making an attack upon the Soviet Union. But if they had not done so, Soviet divisions would have rolled right across Europe into right into Paris, and there would be no slowing down of this, of the Jew-Bolshevik war machine. As it was, the result was bad enough. At the end of the war, the Jew-Bolsheviks controlled all of Eastern Europe. One-third of Germany, all of Austria, all of Czechoslovakia, and all of Eastern Europe. That was bad enough. Had they not been checked by the preemptive strike made by the Central Powers, they would have had all of Europe forever. And a night of savagery and oppression and concentration camps would have descended upon all Europe, and there would have been no hope for humanity. So the problem is that the Jew Bolsheviks had people like evil individuals like Winston Churchill, who walked with a waddle because his rectum was stuffed full of bribes. Bribes were his life. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, they had people like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of the greatest liars and swindlers in the world. He campaigned for the presidency on the promise that he would keep America out of the war. And his actions speak louder than words. And his actions were to drag America into the war on the side of the Jew Bolsheviks as quickly as possible and as massively as possible. And the swindling of the American people was of a sort of legendary, almost to an impossible degree. Joseph Stalin, the frontman of the Jew Bolsheviks, was painted as an avuncular, grandfather-like figure, puffing on his pipe and saying wise things about how the electrification program was proceeding. The press painted the Soviet Union as a paradise. The Hollywood produced movies like North Star, which showed people in the Ukraine living in a kind of idyllic paradise state, all happy farmers. In fact, the Ukrainians were dying to the tune of 10 million. The Holodomor was a deliberate starvation of the Ukrainians. But oh no, North Star was watched by millions of Americans. They saw these wonderful Ukrainians living a happy life under the communists. And then the wicked Germans came, and the Ukrainians stood to it. Fanatically, they rose up against the Germans, and they fought them through every cornfield, through every wheat field, when in reality, the Ukrainians welcomed the Germans as liberators, holding out flowers, offering them bread and salt, the typical Slavic greeting. So the unfortunate thing was, when the Jew Bolsheviks made their war upon the Caucasian race, they had traitors like Winston Churchill, Roosevelt, and they had a powerful propaganda machine that painted the Bolshevik regime as angels and the National Socialists as devils. And therefore, the Jew Bolsheviks won the war, and they attained a dominance over the Caucasian world that today has reached insane proportions. The control of social media, the laws, that the hate laws that prevent any white person from speaking out against the dispossession of his people, against the replacement of whites, first in neighborhood after neighborhood, then in city after city, and soon to be nation after nation. It is unlikely, at the present trend, it is almost certain that the British, the Germans, and the Swedes will become small minorities in their own countries, and then they will be thoroughly beaten, raped, and persecuted as a helpless minority, and finally they will vanish. That is the trajectory of history, unless sufficient whites find the courage to stand up. It is a war in which whites haven't yet started fighting.
Mm-hmm. Frank, thank you so much for honoring my brother, Alfred, with what your words earlier. And I just want to
Did you want to sip a cider for the
camera? No, it's just a little interjection here. This is Monica, Alfred's sister, speaking. And I just want to say that what he would have said to those very nice words that you gave was that he is standing on the shoulders of greats. They're just to give honor to so many of the others. And I know that it was, you know, symbolic what you say, that, you know, there's one, but there are many truth tellers and very brave ones like Ernst Sandl and Robert Faurisson and
Sylvia Stolz
and Ursula Haverbeck, and one that I really need to mention is Wolfgang Fröhlich in Austria, who spent 15 years in jail, and he's out of jail now, and he is fighting harder than ever, let me tell you. And so there are other great people. And what Alfred would also say is that we, like, the situation is not hopeless. It is not hopeless, so we absolutely have to take heart. Many people are waking up about this, and especially actually in Germany, which was the most indoctrinated, most re-educated place of all, because they were like the target population, and then by extension all the whites. But now, with this boot across our neck, with the COVID lie, the people are actually, as much as it looks like there's very many zombies out there, but there are people waking
up. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned Germany being the most beaten down, the most brainwashed, and the most mind-controlled. You have a president, I believe, whose name is Steinmeier. Mm-hmm. This vile individual, this traitor, this running dog, had the nerve to say to the German people that there is no such thing as a biological German. Germany is a land that welcomes people from all countries, formed by people from all countries. There is no such thing as a biological German. So the blonde, fair-skinned, blue-eyed German doesn't exist. Anyone who steps on the land of Germany mm-hmm. becomes a German just by standing on the territory. Mm-hmm. This is what this man is actually saying. That anyone who thinks, if anyone in Germany has the
right
misjudgment, or has the lack of caution or wisdom to say that there are true Germans and there are some who are not true Germans, there is no place for them in Germany. So a German patriot, the descendant of 30 generations of Germans, there is no place for him. But there is place for every Somali who can barge across the borders of Germany. And this is stated by a president of Germany. And once again, I will repeat the name. There is another bottle in the fridge. Once again, I'll repeat the name of this vile traitor, because he deserves in the future to be strung up from every lamppost and pelted with the filthiest objects you can find.
Yes.
His name is Steinmeier.
And he's the president of Germany.
That is right.
Wow.
So, I was going to take questions. Would anyone ask
to Merkel
clarification?
She's the chancellor and he's the president?
Yes.
Yeah,
Merkel is the executive leader who makes the decisions.
Yeah.
This man is the president, which is largely a titular role. But the problem with titular roles is that they are role models and people look up to them.
Yeah.
Influence.
Sure. I thought that was a very interesting very, very on the point history lesson.
Yes.
That he gave us. I'd really like to hear more about where the Bolsheviks started, because he put everything in perspective very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question is not a focused one, but I will address it anyway. Bolshevism is a word, it literally means the majority, but words mean what people use them to mean. They acquire meanings. And today, Bolshevism means the application of communism by Jew supremacists to rule over white peoples. Now, let me get this clear. Communism is the creation of Jews. Marx was a Jew. His friend Engels was a Jew. And all the major ideologues who created the communist ideology were Jews. Now, this is a very anti-white ideology. It starts off with the fact that whites are the most individualistic of people. They evolved living in farms that were independent, out of the way. A man had his own land, therefore he was his own master. The next farm was a few miles away. They cooperated, yes, in communities, but the white is an individualist. He wants to live on his own land, grow his own food, make his own decisions. Today, in a modern industrial age, a white would like to own his own house, pay for his own medical insurance, and if possible, guard his own home. If some intruder comes in, he wants the right to shoot that intruder. He doesn't want to wait for the police who might come or might not, or who might or might not help him. He certainly doesn't wait for the permission. This is the white spirit, individualism. Collectivism is a non-white trait. It grew up in river valleys like Egypt and Sumeria, where everyone had to cooperate in building dams and building waterworks, and they were obedient to the pharaoh, to the king, and the pharaohs became god kings. In Sumeria, the ruler had absolute rule. So people were very conformist. They paid most of their wealth to the state, which controlled it, and doled it out when it felt like. Now, the Jew supremacists, of course, they're a small elite, and they want to rule over a large population. So how does a small elite rule over a large population? Centralized control, total centralized control. Everything gets rooted to a small, single organization. And that is how they wanted it. They wanted total control, so you don't own your own house, individuals don't own companies and compete. No, everything is controlled by the state, and the state is controlled by the Jew supremacists. Mm-hmm. This was probably the vision of Karl Marx and his fellow ideologues. Communism meant total control of the individual by the state, and the state would be controlled by Jew supremacists. Now, of course, with any such ideology, it has several interlocking aims and techniques built into it. When they introduced communism, they also thought this is a fine way to destroy white societies. We can tell the workers that the hand of the people, the brawn of the people, we can tell them that the brain of the people is their enemy.
Mm.
So yeah. The doctors, the professors, the intellectuals, the writers, the thinkers, they're your enemy. And they're exploiting you. They're the bourgeoisie. You've got to not only break into their houses and take their wealth, you've got to cut off their heads. So basically, the Jew supremacists wanted to decapitate the white society, to cut off the leadership, but they would mobilize the working class whites to do it. They turned the hand again and the brawn and muscle of the country against the brain. And once the brain is gone, the head is taken off, then into the place of leadership steps the Jew communist. That was broadly the goal. Now, communism might have many good aspects. It talks about a certain equality of income. It talks about certain equality of opportunity. Every good contains a kernel of truth. Okay? Every evil technique contains a certain amount of virtue in it. That's what gives it its power. But when, and communism is a bad thing because it allows a small elite or even a single individual to rule a country. Witness North Korea. How could this Kim family, the present ruler, that Kim Jong-un, how could they rule such a population so totally? Because of centralized control and the lie to the people that this is your government. Okay? If the state owns on the factories, you own the state and therefore you own the factories, so you should feel good about it. Now, communism may have good aspects, but it is tailor-made for total control, for reducing the people to a state of slavery. The communism of Karl Marx aimed to strip the whites of every support system. So the individual became atomized. He was stripped from his roots. He was stripped from his family. He's told that the family is an evil institution. It is the germ cell of fascism. He's stripped of his national roots. He's told that the nation is a fascist institution. He's stripped of his own culture. And so this individual stands naked before the commissar. So he comes begging, one of the Russian women would come begging to the commissar, I need an allotment of housing, I need a flat, I don't have a home. Unless you sign that piece of paper and give me an allotment in such and such a complex, I'll be on the streets. And the commissar could say, well, who have you to go to? You don't have the support of a tribe, of a clan, not even of your own parents. You can't even look up for family support because we've destroyed the family. You don't even have the comfort, the spiritual comfort of reading a book that appeals to the folk soul of your people. So the individual stood naked, stripped of every support system, of every cultural and historical mooring. The first concern of the Soviet state was to tell people that the nation and patriotism are evil things. Okay? Now, when Jew supremacists used communism as a method, as an institution to rule white peoples, that is referred to as Bolshevism.